I'm going to call this meeting of the House Committee on Economic Development for Monday, March 4th to order. So the first, I think, so we've got multiple bills today dealing with Eastern Oregon Board bills, but I'm first going to open four of the bills to give our Speaker Kotek and Representative Finley an opportunity to testify on those bills. And then after that, I'll close, and then we'll do the bills individually after we receive that testimony. So I'm going to first open the public hearing on House Bill 2453, 2454, 2455, and I don't know about this, 2933. There we go. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Lively, Vice Chair Bonham, Vice Chair Fahey, members of the committee. My name is Lynn Finley. I'm State Representative for House District 60, which includes Malheur, Harney, Grant, Baker, part of Lake County. So I'm here to visit with you to talk specifically about four bills, but to do that, I need to set the stage properly and go back 2 years to the 2017 session, and where House Bill 2012 was created by the Speaker and then Representative Cliff Bentz. House Bill 2012 basically was established in 2017 to deal with the economic disadvantages occurring in Eastern Oregon. It established an Eastern Oregon Economic Development Board, which is a seven-member board appointed by the governor to deal with specific issues, policies and strategies that will prohibit and limit growth. As some of the slides you have in front of you, Malheur County borders the fastest growing region in the United States, and that's in Idaho. The second other things that the board was charged with was promote workforce and economic growth, facilitate development or prevent decline of regionally significant industrial sites. We have, through our land use process in Eastern Oregon, come up with nearly 2,000 acres of available industrial land, but we were getting no bites. Create and maintain jobs within the region, improve access to career and career technical education, workforce training, higher education, enhance availability of qualified workers for employers in the region. If you were able to come to my district and give me unfettered access for a few days, like what happened last summer during the legislative exchange, I put two representatives from the Portland area in my vehicle. I drove them back and crossed the Snake River seven times. Got them lost half the time. They didn't know which state they was in, except when you looked up and you seen barren land fields and no development, they knew they were in Oregon. If you seen houses and economy growing, industry, they knew they were in Idaho. It's very prevalent. So I would love to have that opportunity to show you that, but we won't do that today. Key things that some big takeaways is when you look at the economic development area, Payette County in Idaho, in the last year, 128 were built into support of their economic growth. In Malheur County, 23. If you look more closely, you'll find that there are severe workforce gaps in Oregon, while Idaho attracts workers in many of their industry. Idaho's border towns enjoy access to broadband services based in Boise, where Idaho, where in Oregon customers, not so much. I note that the issues show that House Bill 2012 was developed with a purpose, is a great bill. However, in order to make it truly more effective, we needed to do, and one of the charges was to look at barriers and identify fixes, and that's what you have in front of you. House Bill 2453 will develop a workforce development plan to communicate the advantages of working in Oregon. If the public is not aware of Oregon's higher minimum wage, other workforce opportunities in Treasure Valley, how can we expect to move it there? We've had conversations with Oregon Business Development, and their comment to me was, we don't do workforce training, but they know who does. So this would put those folks in charge of having that ability. House Bill 2454 would give out-of-state applicants seeking occupational licenses the ability to work in Oregon. Right now they can't if they don't have an Oregon license. It would provide them a path to get there through reciprocal issues for a period of time while they became Oregon certified. House Bill 2455 would expand the Border Board's authority to allow them to allocate funding for the development and expansion of broadband internet across the region. Not having access to high-speed internet has become a significant barrier for economic growth. House Bill 2933 is a fix-it bill for granting authority to Oregon Business Development to enter into contracts for workforce housing with private individuals. Typically, they have to work through a government entity or a federal state entity. In this case, the Border Board is a chartered entity. However, they do not lack, according to the Attorney General, they lack the authority to enter into an agreement. Funded in House Bill 2012 was $5 million of allocation for the board to utilize. They want to take some of that money, create a revolving loan fund to have people assist with their rural housing, workforce housing issues. But to do that, they needed to have the authority to enter into those agreements. House Bill 2933 provides them that authority so they can set up the revolving loan fund, have workers or workforce housing issues resolved to make them more affordable. We have through the wizards of technology and the little gremlins in the box, we have members of the Border Board on the phone to talk specific bills as we go through. Shauna Peterson is the chair of the Border Board. Tiffany Cruikshank is on the board. Danny Young, president of Treasure Valley Community College. Stuart Ritz is a professor and he's in charge of the Malheur County Experiment Station. Bill Johnson, what I call the father of Excel, retired Microsoft person, lives there on the board. So they're going to talk about the specifics, but I thought the person that crafted House Bill 2012 and to set all this in motion is sitting to my left. So, Madam Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, North and Northeast Portland, Speaker of the House. Thank you for the opportunity to briefly speak about my support for the work that the folks over in Malheur County are doing on behalf of the Eastern Oregon Border Board that we created in 2017. First of all, I want to thank them. I'm glad they're on the phone. I think the community really came together once the opportunity was presented to say, can we provide autonomy and effort locally to help deal with issues that are very significant on the border with Idaho? I come from a border district. My border is Vancouver, Washington, just over the river. It's a little different dynamic. However, the interrelation between being between two states like that is very real. When you go over to a different time zone, like the good representative is in his edge of the world next to Idaho, there are some significant differences. Mm-hmm. And it's an area of the state that has not had the benefit of the economic development that other parts of the state have had. Through the 2012 board or bill that was created, the board in 17, and with a little bit of funds, we have given a pathway for folks to maybe come up with some new ideas, and they were asked to come up with some legislation. So what I would say with the bills that are before you is they were all pre-session filed. They came from the work of the community, and I think you should take them very seriously for that reason alone. I also want to say I support everything they're trying to do, and these bills aren't perfect, so you should ask hard questions because the goal is to get this right, to make sure that the efforts will actually have the outcomes everyone wants. We're all legislators. We do bills for a living, so ask hard questions. I know there's already some concerns about the profession, the regulation one around the regulatory boards. It probably just needs further elucidation. It's not that it's the bad idea. It just needs a little more work on details. But I would hope that you look at these hard, improve them to make sure that the outcomes that everyone is looking for are actually going to happen, and hopefully pass them on. Because there is some money locally to maybe help with these, and we do need engagement from BIZO on some of these issues as well. So I think there's good work happening out in Representative Finley's district, and I hope you will support that by giving due consideration to all these bills. So thank you.
Any questions for either of these members? Representative Barreto, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Finley, if you were to name maybe the most glaring difference between Idaho and Oregon as far as why the economy would be lacking in Ontario, what would it be? I know the Home Depot and the Walmart do pretty well there, but beyond that.
I think it's been reported to me that the Walmart that's right on the Snake River is probably the most highest grossing Walmart in the in the chain? I mean, it's a, it, you know, I guess there's probably one of the bigger issues is workforce housing and housing. Through another committee, we're working on some land use issues to make more housing available. That's probably a pretty tough issue to get through, and we're working on one of those, one hopefully fixes, but housing, available housing, and is a major issue. We compete very well between Orion and Idaho with quality of schools, curriculum. We have the commerce facilities in Oregon, but we don't have the housing available. And the workers are fully employed on the Idaho side and don't want to deal with the Oregon side right now. So that's one of these bills will hopefully work on that. But housing's probably a major factor of that.
A follow-up on that. So does Payette have an abundance of low income housing over there? I mean, do they?
No, typically not.
Okay.
Any other questions for either of these members? Representative Marsh?
Thank you, Chair. Rep. Finley, my recollection is that the Border Board came up with 4 or 5 priorities in terms of where they felt they needed to move forward. Do you recall that that they put together?
Thank you, Chair Lively, Rep. Marsh. I'm sorry. The Border Board put together a list of about 9 priorities. We worked it and massaged it to try to come up with a legislation that could best fit those.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, in fact, 7 bills that are moving through the House, this body, that I introduce on their behalf. These 5, there's a land use bill that's there, and there's a couple of bills in education that talks about licensure issues and being able to for teachers to work back and forth, and some occupational medical licenses that we're working on to have workforce issues. And probably all of their issues that they talked about, aside from land use, were employee related, and how to figure out how to get the workforce, train the workforce, and have them want to live and work in Oregon.
Sure, go ahead.
Just a follow up, thank you. So they identified, it sounds like they identified some broad issues, and then within many of those issues, there's some legislative fixes that would allow them to work better in that area. But I'm imagining the work is broader than just the legislative fixes.
Chair Lively, Rep. Marsh, absolutely. And they just didn't produce these issues and roll up their goodie bags and go home. They're continuing to work on a regular basis. They meet a couple of times a month, and they're continuing to look at opportunities to enhance and improve how they're doing business. It's an incredibly gifted group that is extremely dedicated to this process. So,
great. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good. Anything further? Doesn't look like it. Thank you both
Thank you.
For being here.
Thank you. Enjoy the bills. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2453, 2454, 2455, and 2933. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2453. So, Melissa, would you describe that bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2453 directs the Oregon Business Development Department to create a workforce development plan for the Eastern Oregon Border Economic Development Region to communicate the workforce advantages of and opportunities in the Western Treasure Valley and to encourage people to move to and to work in the region.
Okay, and I believe that we've been joined. So on this particular run, I have Shauna Peterson and Tiffany Cruikshank scheduled to testify, so if you would introduce yourself for the record and provide your testimony, I'd appreciate it.
Can you hear us okay?
Yes. Sorry.
Priscilla Valero is coming in for Tiffany Cruikshank. My name is Shauna Peterson, and I'm the chair of the Border Board. I had the privilege of addressing your committee last December to update the committee on the work that our board had done. So I appreciated that opportunity, and I appreciate Speaker Pro Tem and Representative Finley's comments to lay the groundwork. Given that, I'll dive right into the bill. 2453 is an acknowledgement of one of the many issues that we identified, and that is that we do have an educated and talented workforce in the fastest growing region in our country within a 50-mile distance of the border, but most are working over there. We do have many who come over to the Oregon side to work, but we would like to expand our outreach to that region because we've determined two things. First, just a lack of knowledge and awareness of the positions that we have and some of the benefits that living in the border region offer, even as compared to thriving Boise. Priscilla Valero will speak to those advantages that we want to highlight. The other thing that we've identified are some perception issues. The job seekers are really kind of stopping their search at the greater Boise metropolitan area, and we have had a few is almost universally, you know, I had no idea the wages were so good. I had no idea it was so easy to get around and to live and work there. So we think it's an untapped resource, and that really is the population that we attract. They like a rural lifestyle. They ideally would come and live in the border region, but if at a minimum we could fill some of our workforce gaps by having people who travel from the Boise Metro to work in our region, we'd settle for that, at least in part. This legislation focuses on the asset that is Business Oregon and taps into that resource to help us to develop a marketing plan for the region to achieve what I've just described. We believe that we've developed content for the marketing plan and are very happy to share that. We're living it, and so we, I'm sure, could benefit from consultants and all the myriad studies that could go into such a thing. But we've successfully identified what we think that marketing plan could consist of. We just want to leverage the resources and launch such a plan. I'll hand it over then to Priscilla Valero to talk about what we want to showcase. So some of the things that we wanted to showcase was that for House Bill 2453, we have a higher minimum wage as opposed then to Idaho. Also, we don't have a sales tax in Oregon, where in Idaho it is a 6% in Idaho. Also, we have numerous employment opportunities here in Oregon as opposed to Idaho, but some of the times those employers would rather go to Idaho than Oregon. The better funded education. So we do have better education system here in Ontario. We have a dual language program, which there isn't any other dual language program within the region. So it does take does give us an advantage to Idaho. Some of the higher education opportunities. I work for Eastern Oregon University, where we do have a site here. We have Oregon State University as well as Treasure Valley Community College, which gives our economic development an advantage because they can get an education here and get the tools that they need to get employment. We have unlimited outdoor activities and quality of infrastructure, as well as a cultural diversity here in Ontario.
Thanks, Priscilla. So we're open to any questions, but that is what I meant when I spoke to content, that the then be finessed and developed into creatives to tap into the resource that is booming growth, 30 minutes away.
Thank you. And Priscilla, could you just introduce yourself for the record, please?
My name is Priscilla Valero, and I'm with Eastern Oregon University, as well as a committee member for House Bill 2012.
Thank you very much. So, members, Representative Wallen.
Thank you. I'm looking at the bill, and it doesn't really seem to do very much. It says to address the best methods of communicating and develop a plan, but it almost sounds like you have the plan and you just need to launch it. So does the I don't know if you have the language of this bill in front of you, but I just want to make sure that this language does what you need.
Representative, I think language can always be tweaked. That, of course, was the result of legislative council drafting a concept into a bill.
Right.
We're certainly welcome to finessing it. It probably does cover it a bit in the methodology reporting. You know, none of us are professional marketers or certainly professionals in the development of creatives. So we've got content. The methodology charge should probably remain in, but otherwise it could likely be finessed.
Okay. Go ahead. I don't know how to make sure that happens, but I don't think it's me that does that. So just make sure that the right people, hopefully you'll weigh in and make sure that happens. Thank you.
Other questions of either of these witnesses? Okay. Doesn't look like it. And that's all we have on 2453. I'll close the hearing on 2453, and I'm going to open a hearing on 2254. So, Melissa, if you would describe.
24.
Oh, I'm just reading the script. I shouldn't just read the script.
My apologies.
So, I'm open the hearing on House Bill 2454. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2454 allows professional licensing boards to issue a license to an out-of-state applicant if the applicant is licensed or authorized in another state to engage in the same occupation or profession, and the applicant intends to engage in the occupation or profession in the Eastern Oregon Border Economic Development Region. It requires the applicants to meet all Oregon standards within 2 years following the date of original license or authorization.
Okay, and I believe Dana and Stuart are to testify on that bill. So if you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Yes, my name is Dr. Dana Young, and I am the president of Treasure Valley Community College and also a committee member of House Bill 2012, Eastern Oregon Border Board. Chair Lively and members of the committee. There's been a lot to expand on this particular bill, except to say that we are having difficulty finding electricians and plumbers and CNAs and folks like that who on the other side of the river in Idaho don't have as strict of licensure requirements. So our ask is really to allow those folks to come across the river and work here in Oregon under their licenses that they have from other states for the 2 years while they are getting their Oregon licensure.
Representative Drazen.
Thank you, Chair. I was curious about this particular bill, since a lot of the focus of this work is around workforce. I wondered whether or not it wouldn't be more beneficial for you guys to develop workforce in the areas you need, rather than open up licensure from people over in Idaho to be able to work in Oregon and then, you know, go back to Idaho at the end of the day. I just kind of wondered about the reasoning for that.
We currently, at Treasure Valley Community College, we currently do offer electrical apprenticeship and plumbing apprenticeship. We offer all of those programs. The way that it works in Oregon is it's a one-to-one ratio for those apprenticeships, and in Idaho, it's 1-to-3 or even 1-to-4. So a journeyman electrician can have more folks working with them to be trained. So there are just more people, not only population-wise, but just trained people in Idaho as compared to Oregon. And we have to get them from across the border to keep our plants going, to keep our facilities going here in Oregon.
Thank you.
Here, I'll take.
Yeah, oh, Scott. Representative Barreto.
We were just making eye contact, so thank you, Mr. Chair. So what kind of licenses are we talking about? Are these like construction, you know, drywall, plumbing, electrical? I'm thinking that, but I'm sure there are other licenses too. So I'm just kind of wondering what if you had a list that you went off of when you were considering this?
Yes, journeyman electrician, plant electrical engineer, plumber, speech-language pathologist, registered nurse, licensed practical nurse, physical therapist, and occupational therapist are the main ones that we've listed.
Okay, thank you.
Representative McLean.
You're welcome.
You said out loud in your testimony that they had 2 years to actually increase their education to get up to the standards of the state of Oregon. Is that correct?
Yes, that's our hope is that in that two-year time period that would allow them to get their education and get the skill set necessary in order to be certified in the state of Oregon. That allows them time to do that.
So the follow-up, I guess, do they have to do it within that two-year period or not? Is it just a suggestion?
Well, I guess it is. It is our recommendation that they be allowed 2 years in order to get that done. And it's similar to other states where they will allow somebody to go to work. And then in that, I'll give you an example. So for our newly graduated nursing students in Idaho, they can go right to work while they're waiting to pass their NCLEX exams. And so they can do that, they can continue to work there for a time period while they're trying to pass that exam. So we're asking to be more similar to Idaho in this case.
Representative Grayson, did you have anything?
So a follow-up to that, and so for the two-year period, if someone begins working in that two-year period, what is enforcement for that? So who determines when the two-year period is over, that they don't just slide into a third or fourth year? And what happens if they exceed the two-year period and continue to work in Oregon without actually pursuing the additional credential that would otherwise be necessary?
Well, that's a great question. We'll have to figure out a tracking mechanism for that. Stuart, did you want to address that?
If I may, so I'm Stuart Rice with Oregon State University and also a member of the Border Board. If you look in the wording of the bill, there is that two-year limit, and it also allows the different licensure agencies or governing boards to set rules that through the rulemaking process could require, for example, once a person registers, then have 2 years in which to verify that they've completed Oregon standards. And please keep in mind that this is looking at people who are licensed in another state. Obviously, most of the people would probably be licensed out of Idaho, but there could be people wishing to move to this area. So they would already be licensed in. Many of the standards for electricians, plumbers, many of these professional trades are based on national standards with individual states or localities perhaps adding different modifications to it. So the people would be well qualified, but one of the deterrents is simply that they are constrained by having to come to Oregon passing certain working requirements before they can begin to work. So it really inhibits people from coming here to apply their skills that they've already acquired. So this would be an avenue that would work for the border area, potentially other areas in the state as well, where it allows people to come in within a defined period of time to establish their full Oregon credentials. So it's not necessarily that the Oregon standards are that much more onerous or things like that. It's the inability to work, even though you have a license from another state, is the deterrent to people coming here.
Representative Wallen.
Thank you. Quick question. Is 2 years long enough for all of these licensing, all of the different licensures, because I've been told different things, that in my area it's longer
but I know in certain parts of the state, maybe, or the whole state, becoming an electrician, even if you're licensed in another state, is a longer than a two-year process. So is 2 years long enough?
Well, that is potentially a question. So again, for things like electricians that have so many hours of requirements to obtain your Oregon license, well, they, again, I imagine depending on how the governing board for electricians, for example, accounts for that, they may already be well advanced to it. And so it's the additional requirements beyond that that may take time. But I think 2 years in general probably be a good, at least a good starting point.
Representative Fahey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions. I'll ask them both at the same time. So one of them is whether you have data about how the time period other states allow is sort of a grace period to get licensed. You know, did the 2 years come from, yeah, that's what the majority of states do. And then the second question is, I see the list of occupations that you've talked about, and I just wanted to get confirmation. The bill doesn't limit it to those occupations. It's really to any occupation that's been licensed, that's being licensed in the state of Oregon.
So we developed some of the examples that we've spoken about through discussions we have had with business leaders here in the border region. And these are some of the ongoing needs that they have identified. But I would say that those examples are far from an exhaustive list of what could be useful for the border region. So I think that is why we have left it open to all professional licensure categories, not just a particular subset.
And so, thank you. And so the other question was about the two-year time period and whether you had looked at any information about how other states handle that sort of grace period in their licensing practices.
The two-year time period came through the legislative riders basing that off of. I'm not sure how extensive that survey may have been or what data they were using there.
Other questions for this panel? Stuart, did you have anything else to add about this bill?
No. Data has covered some of the other points that I was going to raise.
Okay. If there's nothing further, I have one more. Amy Joyce has signed up to testify, please.
Chair Lively and members of the committee, my name is Amy Joyce from the Oregon Department of Transportation. Just here kind of in the spirit of what Speaker Kotek mentioned in terms of questions to ask and some clarifications perhaps from the bill. The first thing is that the way we read the bill is that it is permissive that a professional licensing board may issue a license if certain criteria are met. So I think one clarification is whether the bill is truly intended to be permissive to agencies or whether it would become a requirement upon the agencies. And then in that vein, whether or not permissive or if it were to become mandatory, some of the questions that we would ask is whether some of the rulemaking that's allowed under the bill could provide some sideboards. And some of those questions have been asked from the dais already. But I would say, you know, one of those might be, would the person be required to live in that economic development region or work in that region or remain in that region for those 2 years? Would the person need to actually apply and actively pursue that professional licensure or certification. Under the terms of the bill right now, it doesn't appear to be that way, but that might be a question for rulemaking. And then also whether the agency could deny the certification if the person had, and I'll use sort of in air quotes, issues in the other state, if there were some pending investigation or problem. So those just are some of the things that perhaps we as an agency would think about when we do some of our licensures. The primary one that I'm thinking of at the moment is a commercial driver's license, and it is likely that federal law would probably preempt this provision. There are certain things that one must demonstrate under federal law to be able to get a CDL, but the agency does do some other professional certification. So just wanted to present those questions really for the committee and would be happy to be involved in any work group or discussions as this bill progresses through the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. Any questions for Amy? Thanks for justifying. Okay, so anything further before I close this hearing and open the next one? Okay. So I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2454, and I will open the hearing on House Bill 2455. And Melissa, if you would describe that bill, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2455 defines development or expansion of broadband internet access service as economic development for the authorized purposes of the board, the Eastern Oregon Board or Economic Development Board, including awarding grants and loans from their fund. The bill also makes other changes to their statutes.
Okay, and I have Stuart again and Bill Johnson, I believe, is joining us. So whichever one wants to go first, if you'll just introduce yourself for the record and provide your testimony, please.
Hi, Vice Chair Barnum, Faye, committee members, I'm Bill Johnson. Despite Representative Finley's nice words, I am not the father of Excel. Hey, Charles, Doug, Chris, some other people get that title. I might have been a midwife once upon a time. And I do need to declare a potential conflict of interest. I serve on the board of directors for a local CLEC, a competitive local exchange carrier named Farmers Telephone Company. That's in Fulton, Idaho, across the border. A few minutes ago, Representative Finley described some of the differences between the border region and adjacent communities in Idaho. The purpose of the board is to increase our competitiveness versus those communities in Idaho. One clear differentiator these days is broadband access. This is a problem across Oregon, especially rural Oregon. The difference we have here is that on the Idaho side, that CLEC that I'm involved with is busy building out fiber connections to every home and every business in the local community. And as a result, when home buyers are looking to choose where they live, Fruitland is a much more attractive option than Ontario. Looking ahead, we need to have solutions that work. And while the governor has a program that's trying to make some progress, we need to have other good ideas. And so House Bill 2455 simply empowers the board in clear fashion to work on this problem. Without this language, it's not clear exactly what our scope is with regard to broadband infrastructure. It does make some other non-substantive housekeeping changes. It's a pretty long bill, but there's really only a couple sentences related to broadband here. And certainly we look for the support, hopefully easy support for this bill from the committee. Are there any questions?
Any questions for Bill? Representative Drazen?
Thank you, Chair. I was just wondering, I had, as I understood it, that you guys got $5 million originally towards your border board to invest and spend on some of these concepts. How much of it do you think you would hope to spend towards broadband?
Chair Lively, Representative Drazen, we do have a $5 million fund. That fund's going to be used for loans as well as for grants. We have a subcommittee now that's defining the framework in which we make those decisions and evaluate different applications people have. We've made no decisions to date about how we'd allocate that based on the different opportunities we have to spend monies. Personally, I don't think we can solve very many problems in the broadband infrastructure space for an amount of money like $5 million. That's a lot of money until you get spending the money. And so I think what we need to do is we need to perform other studies or analyses that focus on competitive in this space. Again, that's my opinion. The board hasn't made any decisions at all yet.
Thank you. Other questions? So what's the let's say all this passes, I'm trying to understand the timeline and when you would be to the point that you could start making the strategic investments or make the funds available to do, whether it's broadband or do some of the other things you're talking about.
That's a good question. I might defer to Chair Peterson here to answer that question about timelines. Chair Peterson?
Thank you, Speaker Wiley. Thank you, Bill. We had set a project plan from the onset of the formation of our board and had wanted to have the framework in place and start awarding grants by the end of March. The rule drafting has taken longer than we expected. And so I think our first round of funding will happen in the next 6 months, but that won't be exhaustive. I think at the cost of slowing us down, we've been incredibly deliberate and set a lot of goals in terms of leveraging the money, seeking matching grants, making more loans than grants, that sort of thing. And that slowed us down just a little bit. So right now, we can't say with any certainty that anything's been allocated for broadband or any specific cost. It's on the list. It's not necessarily on the short list, if that answers your question.
Sure. And again, for the record, since we're in a new public hearing, if you could identify yourself for the record.
My apologies. Shauna Peterson, Chair of the Board of Board.
Thank you very much. So other questions about this? Stuart, do you have issues, things to discuss regarding this particular measure?
No, Chair Wiley, not at this time.
Okay. Representative Wallen.
Thank you. Sir. I think you just said this, but I just wanted to have you clarify. Are you in the process of studying what broadband you do need, or is that something you're thinking about doing with some of the money?
Chair Lively, Representative Wallen, I think that would be one application of some funds, is to define exactly what the problem is we need to solve.
Got it. Thank you.
Any other questions by members of the panel? Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, thank you, Bill. Are most of the businesses over there, do they have wireless already? I mean, do you have wireless companies there that already produce a product for the area? I think it would be fairly flat over there, and wireless would work fairly well.
Chair Lively, Representative Barreto, as you know, across Oregon, there are many vendors for different levels of services. Certainly, in some cases, you've got full-fledged fiber optic connections here in Ontario to the hospital, for instance, through wireless based up in Northeast Oregon. There are some wireless providers as well, either through fixed terrestrial solutions or through wireless telephone sorts of solutions. There are satellite solutions as well. But as you look across this space that we have to cover here, there are no comprehensive answers, and there's no consistent answer that provides the services people need everywhere. And so it's certainly true that some people in the border region have a good solution. But again, if we're competing with the people on the other side of the river, that area will have 100% coverage within 24 months for every home and every business with a fiber optic connection. And so we need to understand how we respond to that competitive threat.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? Doesn't look like it. Okay, thank you very much. And I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2455. And I'll open a hearing on House Bill 2933. So, Melissa?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2933 makes the development of residential housing that is necessary to attract and keep employees in the Eastern Oregon border region part of the workforce development purposes and activities of the Border Board. The bill also authorizes the Oregon Business Development Department to enter into intergovernmental agreements to administer the Eastern Oregon Border Economic Development Board Fund. This bill makes similar non-substantive changes to the board statutes.
Okay. And I believe, Shauna, you're going to address this, so if you'd introduce yourself again for the record for this hearing.
Shauna Peterson, Chair of the Eastern Oregon Border Economic Development Board. House Bill 2933 is, as Representative Findley and Noni presented, a bit of a housekeeping bill. As we've worked toward the programmatic, we call them, solutions, the ways we would spend our money, that is in contrast to the policy solutions, which are the bills that have been heard before this committee as well. It has been unearthed, if you will, in discussions with the Attorney General's Office, Department of Justice, that spending our funds and entering into the requisite agreements to do so to develop or promote the development of residential housing in the border region would not be permitted under the strict language of the bill as drafted. This proposed amendment to the bill would expand the definition of economic to development to include that sort of activity. Our board has identified that a major shortcoming, and Representative Finley shared some of the numbers that we've discerned, is that the growth, the residential growth, the stability of our tax base in the entire border region is struggling and fragile. And so we've looked at solutions. Our rural land use bill is one component. This would permit the other element being programmatic changes, allowing us to use our fund to incent housing development in the border region.
Very good. Questions? Regarding this particular bill. Looks like you have any additional you'd like to add?
Thank you, Chairman.
Chair, thank you. So, and I have nobody else signed up to speak, so I'll close the hearing on House Bill 2933, and thank you for joining us today and providing your input. We look forward to continuing to work with you to get these bills in the best shape and to pass them on your behalf. Thank you very much. Okay, so now I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3110. So Melissa, if you describe this bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3110 creates the Oregon Rural Service Center within the Oregon Business Development Department to assist rural counties, cities, and special districts to learn about, apply for, and manage grants and other funding opportunities to support community workforce and economic development.
Okay. Representative Bonham, did we run former Representative Huffman off, or?
Yeah, you know, he's the one that's supposed to be kicking off our presentation here, Chair Lively, so hopefully he's standing right outside the door.
Hopefully, that's right.
I can get started, it's fine.
Okay.
So just a little brief history on
for the record.
Oh, for the record, yes, thank you. Oh, yes, indeed. My name is Daniel Bonham from House District 59. It's the western half of Wasco, Jefferson, Wheeler, northern Deschutes County, and it includes all the lands of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. And with me here today, distinguished guest, honorable former Representative John Huffman, whose shoes are still too big to fill, but we try on a daily basis. So, John, would you like to kick us off?
I would, sir. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Chair Lively, committee, it's great to see you. Good to be with you. I'm John Huffman. I am the agency director for USDA Rural Development for the state of Oregon. And I am here to basically present what the need is that I identified early on in my job. I've been there about a year and a half now. And the first several months, I went out into the very rural parts of Oregon and met with a lot of small volunteer special district, fire district, water district, small community mayors, where everybody's volunteer in the communities would, if they were lucky, have a halftime recorder, and often not at all. And so I would be meeting with them and they'd say, we would absolutely love to access some of the money that rural development has, and I probably don't have as much money as Senator Johnson likes to say several times in public meetings where I'm the guy with the checkbook and have more money than God. That's not true. But in the last 2 years in Oregon alone, between grants, loan guarantees for rural businesses and whatnot, we've done a little over $1.1 billion. And that's pretty normal for us, $600+ million per year. It's in rent subsidy. Again, a lot of loan guarantees for energy projects, rural businesses, housing, single-family home guarantees, direct loans where banks are not willing because of a credit score to loan to a family. That's where rural development single-family housing comes in. So we have almost 50 different programs that we administer in Oregon. And so it's a combination of all that that comes up with the $1.1, $1.2 billion for the biennia. But I get out and I talk to a lot of people, and they say, we'd like to access your programs, but we don't have the capacity. And so I said, after a few times, I started catching on, because I'm smart that way. And I said, what do you mean by capacity? I'm not really following. I mean, we do have rules around our grant programs and our low-interest loans and stuff, but you're not able to access them. Why? If it's not the rules. And they said, well, we don't have full-time people. We don't have anybody that can write a grant for us. We don't have full-time staff that can write a grant that's going to be successful. And a lot of our grants are for Oregon only, but a lot of them are also nationally competitive. And so you've got to have somebody that's proficient at grant writing to be able to get in there and compete for $1 million broadband grant or whatever that might be. And we've just found that in these very small rural and frontier areas, they don't have the they might have the retired talent. I don't want to say they don't have the talent. They don't have the talent that has the time or the willingness or whatever, because oftentimes people do that for money. And so that's kind of setting the stage for what the need is out there. And as I started hearing about the capacity need, I went back and I talked to Greg Wolf at Association of Oregon Counties, Tracy Rutten at League of Oregon Cities, Mark Landauer at Special Districts, Lori Satinspiel at School Boards, because I dealt with it as a legislator. We had small rural districts that wanted to apply for the CTE grant. We as the legislature felt really good that we had really built up this CTE fund, but come to find out, it was a competitive grant situation, or at least it was a couple of years ago. And if you didn't have a Brian Krieg in there reminding the rest of the board that was reviewing the grant applications that, wait, you can't just look at how slick this grant application is, because you have to weight it with the fact that it's from a very, very small school district, and the part-time coach probably put the grant together to get it into the Department of Education. So there are lots of needs out there, and as I talked to AOC, LOC, special districts, and school boards, they said, oh yeah, you've identified a long-time problem that we've had and never figured out how to deal with it. And so that's kind of what was the basis for going to Rep. Bonham's Legislative Rural Policy Work Group and saying, what can be done? As a federal employee, I can't sit here and advocate for House Bill 3110. All I can do is present the need out there, and it's a very real need. Can these small rural Paisleys, Jordan Valleys, whatever, could they find USDA Rural Development and access us? In the technical sense, yes, they could. But if you don't know who to go to, I was in Tie Valley several months ago with Business Oregon for an infrastructure meeting, and the volunteer person for the rural fire district, and at the time, one of my sons was the emergency operations director for Wasco County, and so I knew that Wasco County had some funds that they could give this rural fire district for education about the buffer between home and forest, the defensible area. I knew that there was money for them there, but she was asking us in that meeting, do you know of any money? I want to send out a postcard. I want to send out a flyer, try to educate our patrons about this defensible space and get them more educated. And I didn't want to speak up and throw my son under the bus, but I said, well, there is money available, yes. But a lot of times these volunteers, they're retired. They don't have the time or the knowledge or the ability to find out where to go, much less actually make an application. And so the guts of the concept are going to follow me in testimony and explain what 3110 does, why it would work, the purpose of the advisory board that comes with it, and why Business Oregon was selected as the fiduciary. It's had a lot of stakeholder involvement from anybody and everybody that was invited to come and participate and speak to it. It's excited a lot of people because of the monies that can be accessed with the right capacity, the right assistance through economic development districts. I think we could have a lot more $15,000 grants that partially pay for the Grange roof for Waltersville. We can have a lot more of the Almsville grants that pay for the police cars, the rural ambulance districts and fire districts that this last year we've given $65,000 here and $50,000 there. We do have some successes, but we could have so many more if these folks just had the ability to get to us and access our funds. So I will shut up there. I'm happy to come back up later for questions if you want, but I think we've tried to make sure that a lot of the questions will be answered in testimony.
Former Representative Huffman, I just thought maybe if a listener that if you drove faster, you could be in more places.
And you, Mr. Chair, you know, it's interesting. My staff has shrunk since I've been there. I haven't run anybody off, but we're down about 9 people in the last year and a half. But aside from that, it's more of an ethical situation where we can't fill out the application for people. They have to do it on their own because even if it's in-state, they're competitive in-state, and we've only got so many millions of dollars to dole out. So it wouldn't be fair for us to do applications for some and not others. So that, it's a conundrum.
Very good.
I couldn't get through this without saying conundrum. I'm so proud of myself.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Lively. Just a brief history of how we even got to the legislative policy group. So, you know, it was a year and a half ago, I sit at home, I read an article that Representative Huffman was taking a new job, and I decided I was going to throw my hat in the ring. And so I reached out to John and said, hey, you know, can we visit about your experience and what you were doing and how you were successful or where you found you might have invested more time to go back and do it over again? And he pointed to 3 work groups that he was a part of, one on privacy, one on trafficking, and another on the drones. And he said, you know, we got a lot of work done. We were bipartisan. We really vetted these things. By the time it came out of our work group, we knew we had a good product to go showcase to the other folks. And so I asked the question. I said, so if you were to do it over again, would those still be the 3 things you would focus on? And we started to talk about this rural concept, you know, that there are different needs on our side of the state than there are in the Willamette Valley. And so we did it. With the help of my staff, put together a rural policy work group, and we had a very diverse set of stakeholders that came to the table. And the nice thing for me, it was kind of a confluence of learning from John, but also some historic lessons I had learned at Evergreen Airlines, where I worked for Dell Smith, who was the founder and chairman of the company. And he used to always say that no one is smarter than everyone. And I just absolutely loved that. And as we got together with this group and we started to hear from the different players around the room, as John articulated, you know, there's absolute need out there for these small communities that just don't have the access that a lot of us who live in more urban centers have. And so we started this. It's been a long journey, to be honest, to get here. We're on probably our 8th iteration of how we thought we would get to a solution that we could present. And it does come with a financial ask. And at the same time, what we saw, particularly in an example from the state of Hawaii, is that they experienced a 10-to-1 return on their investment. We're targeting hopefully a 3-to-1 return to be more conservative, if I can use that word, hoping that we can deploy this and get the returns. But again, it's been a diverse group coming together to try and deploy this concept. And honestly, the folks that will speak after me know a lot more about the nuance and the intricacies of it. So I will stop talking and let them come forward. But I appreciate you guys considering this concept. And I think it would be an important step for rural Oregon to have access to these funds.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, one more example. Some people in the building might know that I had a measure of success in Ways and Means and capital construction, taking some money for really good projects back to Eastern Oregon. And after I got to rural development, and this is part of right. my interest in this bill too, I realized that the $500,000 that I got for the Mosier Fire Hall and the $725,000, I think it was, for the Spray Fire Hall, and a number of different projects that I'd gotten legislative funding for. Some of it was general fund and some of it was lottery bonding. It was a combination of both. But I figured out that had I known and had the rural fire district known, they could have applied through USDA rural development, because we do that. We grant and loan money for rural fire halls. And so that was what really increased my passion for it. I thought, I thought, well, you know, maybe Speaker Kotek might be interested in the ability for rural legislators to be able to really do more for their districts without waiting to the Capital Construction Subcommittee meeting and presenting this list that is so oversubscribed anyway that it's really tough. So to do one big thing for rural Oregon, you know, maybe this could be it.
Very good. Any questions for Representative Barreto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this may come up later, John, but you know, when you hire a grant writer, do you hire them by the job, by the hour? How do they view a grant and what it costs to have that written up?
Chair Lively, Rep. Barreto, that is flexible within the bill for economic development districts. If they want to hire an additional grant writer or two, they can do that. If they want to contract with a quality grant writing service to do the project, they can do that. It's up to them on how they use the money, but the oversight and accountability is very specific in the bill about what they have to do to meet the needs if they've got multiple small communities or entities approaching them for help.
Yeah. Representative Drazen.
Thank you, Chair. And it's possible that there's another panel coming after you guys that might be able to answer this question. But I was curious about the placement within Business Oregon, and it seems to me that they're primarily focused on traded sector. This just looks like it's kind of an expansion of their mission and kind of just a slightly outside of what they typically do. So I was just curious about that as a choice for housing this effort.
Chair Lively, Representative Drazen, their role will be purely fiduciary. The role really like will be
fiscal agent for them.
Fiscal agent for the economic development districts, yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Rev. Drazen, it probably one of our biggest state partners, state agency partners for USDA Rural Development is Business Oregon. Mm-hmm. We do a tremendous amount of work out there from business support, business loans, infrastructure, the infrastructure finance, the one-stop centers for where my program director meets with Business Oregon folks for water and wastewater systems for rural communities. So they really are engaged at a pretty strong level in rural business.
Okay, any further questions? Doesn't look like it.
Thanks
you both
so much
for being here. You bet. So next I'm going to call up Mark Landauer and Mary MacArthur. If you just introduce yourselves for the record, please.
Mary MacArthur, thank you, Chair Lively, and the rest of the committee. I'm here not as my day job of Executive Director of Columbia Pacific Economic Development District, but as President of Oregon's Association of Economic Development Districts statewide. And what we're looking at here is how would this funding be delivered statewide. And we have within Oregon one of Oregon's best kept secrets, which is, I believe, our 11 federally designated economic development districts. And this is what we do. This is our job, is to provide these kinds of technical assistance services to our local and small rural communities and special districts. This is not new news that this need is out there. We all do comprehensive economic development strategies that involve all of our small communities and all of our economic partners. And capacity is probably one of the highest needs within our districts in terms of our constituents and stakeholders. We also have on staff, almost all of our districts have the capacity for doing grant writing, or at a minimum have already relationships with the funders, with USDA, Business Oregon, EDA, US EDA, Rural Development, RDI, that we already are working with them on grants and projects that are co-funded or just we work together with them. In COPAC, my district alone, we had worked on a successful grant with USDA for $3 million for the Oregon Manufacturing Innovation Center. COPAC is working, went out to the Ford Family Foundation and received a $110,000 grant for a small commercial fisheries project out of Garibaldi. And we've also just recently received, Garibaldi's also received a $15,000 our USDA Rural Development grant. So it's, and we do grant management services for block grants, and we are just one of, like I said, of 11 districts. So this capacity is there. I guess what I'd like to leave you with is that this, if this makes it through the process and in terms of the funding and that kind of thing, what you have before you is a high reward, low risk service delivery mechanism. You don't have to go out and build a new system. You don't need to do anything different than just work within an existing system that the US EDA is already helping to support in terms of giving this sort of the initial capacity. But we would just need more to be able to do more. Thank you.
Thank you. Mark.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landauer. I am here on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. We represent some 957 special districts across the state, providing a variety of different key services to the citizens of Oregon, including water, sewer, fire, irrigation, ports, park, and rec, just to name a few. Our membership is extremely diverse in its geographic distribution, size, and budgets. SDO would like to thank Representative Bonham and Director Huffman for the great work that they've done on House Bill 3110, creating the Oregon Rural Services Center within OBDD. This is an absolutely critical service, not only for my members, but for members throughout Oregon. For many years, I've watched a plethora of federal grant opportunities that, frankly, people just do not have the capacity to apply for, let alone administer. And I'd really emphasize the administration of a grant. Once you're lucky enough to get one of them, there is a Byzantine of paperwork that folks must comply with in order to remain eligible. They're auditing. There is just an enormous amount of effort that has to go into these what would seem to be very simple grants, but in fact, the federal paperwork, I can assure you, several trees sacrificed their lives for following those instructions. For my members, you know, it's interesting. We have a number of districts throughout the state of Oregon that are really just run by volunteers. These individuals typically do not have the professional background to take on these very complex grant applications, let alone, again, complying with the paperwork requirement. Many of our districts, for example, fire districts, rely on larger fire districts for hand-me-downs, literally fire equipment that gets passed down to jurisdictions over the years. I'm familiar with one fire district that still has a fire tender from 1969. I mean, these are the kind of districts we're talking about throughout the state. For us, because of the nature of so many of our districts being volunteers, needless to say, we just don't have the capacity to go after these types of grants, and they're critically important to be able to deliver high-quality services that the citizens of Oregon have become to rely on and expect. We're very supportive of this measure, and again, really want to compliment Representative Bonham, Director Huffman. This is something that's been needed for a great number of years, and I'd like to just individually thank them for their efforts on this, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Any questions for either of these panelists? Doesn't look like it. Thank you very much for testifying. Now I will call up Jim McCauley and Amanda Dalton.
Chair Lively and members of the committee, Amanda Dalton. I'm here today on behalf of the Association of Counties. Greg is usually who you have before you, but all of our commissioners and our staff are in DC, so you're stuck with me. But I did indeed spend a few hours with this work group over the interim, and just want to thank Rep. Bonham for all the time and former Rep. Huffman. You've heard a lot about what this bill does, and we just kind of want to echo our support. We did submit written testimony, so I won't go through a lot of it. But as you've heard, the language in front of you does represent the process of an interim work group where we did spend a ton of time kind of crafting to the solution that you see in front of you. AOC does believe that this bill will provide a solution for small rural and frontier counties. As you've heard, it's become increasingly difficult, in most cases almost impossible, for our rural and frontier cities and counties to apply for basic state grant programs. These grants can include everything from housing and infrastructure, economic development grants, all of which are very good programs that the legislature has created that are well-meaning, but really unavailable to many that they are designed to help. This is largely because as our natural resource-based economies have declined, so has the revenue to support the staff capacity to carry out some of the basic functions required for in applying for and administering these grant programs. The same is true, as you've heard from Rep. Huffman and others, for these federal grant programs such as the USDA. So our jurisdictions simply don't have the staff or capacity to apply or manage for these grants. We believe House Bill 3110 addresses these problems, and we urge your support.
Thank you.
For the record, Chair Lively and Vice Chairs, Jim McCauley representing the League of Oregon Cities. I don't want to spend a lot of time rehashing what other folks have already offered in terms of support, but the League's 3110. I myself have a chance to serve on the work group in advance of session, but obviously a lot of work done by both Representative Bonham as well as Director Huffman. I think this is an excellent framework to be able to move forward with. The dash ones certainly reflect a change on what was originally envisioned. LOC and AOC had a more direct role, I'll say, in the delivery mechanism, but I think in the end, it makes more sense to utilize an existing infrastructure that's in place within both Business Oregon, but also those economic development districts, and I think that's a much better way to make use of those funds going forward, as opposed to trying to recreate something that we don't have to do or duplicate from what's existing out there right now. The other part of this thing that I think is important as far as the bill will be the advisory board. I realize that there are a number of different boards that Business Oregon has to report to, but I think for transparency and to make sure that this funding is able to actually do what we intend it to do, there needs to be some type of reporting element and some type of oversight. And I think with that oversight component in those dash one amendments, you're going to have representatives from both LOC and AOC, as well as other legislators, and also other professionals and things of that nature that deal with some of those economic development tools every day. So we're hopeful that this bill is able to make it through. It'll be able to drop an important, I'll say, seed into some of that economic development that's out there. I think from our perspective, 3110 is part of a larger package, in all honesty, for rural Oregon. And there's opportunities, certainly within economic development, for future investment in broadband, 911, as well as some housing elements and things of that nature that are part of other bill packages, as you're going to be seeing here as the session progresses, that I think are also very important to this overall improvement of rural Oregon's economic health. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for either one of these panelists? Doesn't look like it. Thank you both for testifying. That's the last people I have signed up for that measure. So if I close it? Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to close.
Sorry.
I took it back.
Okay. I just have a quick question of the sponsor that I didn't realize to ask when you were up there. The funding, $875,000. Mm. I know Business Oregon is lottery funded and other funds. Their only general fund department is the Arts Commission. So is that amount intended to be general fund, lottery fund, or other funds?
The intent of that would be general fund. Thank
you. Representative Marsh, please.
Thank you. I also had a question of the sponsor, although I've been in and out of the room, so if you already answered it, I'll catch up with you later.
Probably do.
That was a question of the selection of 1,000 people as the threshold. Did you address that already?
We did not.
Because I'm sitting here looking at the list of towns in Oregon, and there's another 100 that are under 5,000, and I know that's a targeted area for USDA, because I've been cruising the USDA sites and sending it out to all my little towns to get them to write up for those grants. And those small towns have no capacity for doing this work either.
Chair Lively, again, for the record, John Huffman, USDA State Director for Rural Development. Rep. Marsh, the dash one actually spells out a threshold of 2,500 for communities and 12,000 for counties. To get this kicked off, we kind of needed to draw the line somewhere. The 1,000 that is, that is only there as an example. There are 149 communities in Oregon that have 1,000 or fewer residents in them. If you go up to 2,500, we didn't get those numbers, but we wanted to expand it to make it a little more fair. A lot of the supporters didn't want any hard numbers at all, but we wanted to make sure that those tiny communities that we started out that really don't have the help, we're able to get it first. And if we can expand that down the road, it'd be lovely.
Can I just follow up? Thank you. So with the county limit of 12,000 population, you're really targeting specific areas of the state. So my question then is, do you still need as many bodies in the economic development realm? We don't have counties of 12,000 all over the place.
Chair Lively, Rep. Marsh. Again, we were kind of choosing some arbitrary numbers. I'll be the first to admit it. We really think, based on our work with AOC, LOC, special districts, and school boards, that the requests are going to come through the partner network of regional solutions, economic development districts, and the associations themselves. And I really see the small communities, the school boards, the special districts being the largest users of this. There could be some frontier counties, like Wheeler County has 1,400 and some people left. You know, they might really need the benefit and the access. But I don't know, you'll have too many people sit here and say, yes, that was an arbitrary number.
Okay, thank you.
And we are open to suggestions, by the way, if we could perfect that number.
Any further questions while we still have access to both of these witnesses? Okay, I'm gonna close the public hearing then on House Bill 3110. So I believe that's our last
public hearing. Correct.
Okay, so we have one measure. So I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2334. And Melissa, would you remind us about this bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is the bill you heard a week ago. It, House Bill 2334, designates a violation of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission alcohol service permit requirements by either a licensee or a permittee, a Class B violation, which has a maximum fine of $1,000 instead of, as we discussed, the Class A.
Chair Lively, I move House Bill 2334 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bonham moves House Bill 2334 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, call the roll, please.
Representative Barreto?
Aye.
Representative Friesen?
Aye.
Representative Helm?
Aye.
President Marsh?
Aye.
President McEwen?
Excused.
President McLean?
Aye.
President Wallen?
Yes.
President Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Bonham?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. Motion passes. Representative Stark will be the carrier of this bill.
This bill.
So I'll close the work session. Is there anything else to come before the committee?
Just as a reminder, Mr. Chair, we do not have committee on Wednesday, and so we have moved the two marijuana bills to March 13th on our calendar.
Okay. Thank you all. We're adjourned.